At the end of 2015, global displacement reached a record high of 65.3 million people who've been forced to leave their homes. In its unfathomable amount of people who are seeking asylum, which includes a large amount of young people, and Emma Morris, producer and filmmaker, recently spent 10 days in Calais, France, where she worked with filmmaker Poppy Stockel to shed light on the experiences of the young migrants. I've got Emma on the line with us right now. Hi, Emma. How are you going?
I'm good. How are you?
Really well, thanks. Thanks for joining us on 2SER this afternoon.
No worries at all.
Now, really interesting project that you were involved with over at Foreign Correspondent. Can you tell us about the project, how it all sort of started and what you're, how you were involved?
Sure. Well, the project was the brainchild of Poppy Stockel, the filmmaker that I worked with over at Foreign Correspondent. And I guess what she was really interested in is understanding young people's experiences. And France is a really good microcosm for the rest of the world and you know, the huge displacement crisis that we're facing globally. So we really focused on Calais, Dunkirk and Paris, and those three different experiences for young people, but also families trying to all seek asylum, mostly in the UK, and the complicated sort of route that people do take as well to seek asylum in France.
Well, and that's it. It's something I don't really think about, but these refugees are obviously travelling through Europe, getting to the west coast of France, trying to make their way to the UK. But of course, there's a big channel there. Obviously, it's a very busy path for transport and traffic and trucks and whatnot. But these young migrants basically sort of almost collaborating around certain areas, trying to get across. Must have been a really eye-opening experience.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. And, you know, it's not a new issue. You know, people have been going to Calais for years. Obviously, it's a border city, so the port there is accessible not far from the UK itself. And after, in 2016, the jungle, after the jungle was demolished, there's no visible camps in Calais anymore. Where, you know, we had a lot of media coverage with what was going on in Calais, particularly in Calais, but also in Dunkirk, there's another camp there. Mm. And I guess, you know, when we actually arrived in Calais, it's noticeable, you know, there are people still everywhere. People are beginning to trickle back. The removal of camps doesn't solve the problem. There are still humans, you know, in and around and being moved away from Calais, but then people started to slowly trickle back. And now, you know, there are no services really to support these people. You know, there's no food, clothing, shelter for them to actually have any support. So you have a lot of high number of young people and a high number of young men. I think it's something like 97% of young people there are actually young boys. Mm. And they really are fending for themselves. And well, obviously there's some volunteer supporters there that are, you know, trying their best to support in whichever way they can. There's two meals served a day. There's info buses with the legal, complicated way of trying to seek asylum, either in France or, you know, but it's, you know, it seems very apparent from the conversations that I had on the ground with young people and with volunteers that people are just really determined to get to the UK.
Yeah, and particularly the episode I watched about Calais, you meet a 13-year-old Mahmoud, and you sort of follow him around the town and sort of ask him questions about what it's like where he is, and it's really sad to sort of see the conditions they're in, but also they're so hopeful about we're going to get to the UK and everything's going to be much better. Have people actually made it to the UK, and has there been some sort of stories about what it was like when they got there?
Sure, there's a lot of success stories, you know, of people making their way. I guess, you know, there's a lot of also misinformation. And Chris, one of the young volunteers that I spent some time with, talks about, you know, that it's really hard to break people's dreams, you know. People have very determined ideas and ideals around getting to the UK that it will solve some pretty horrific journeys that they've made and some pretty some pretty hard situations that they've left at home as well. So, and you know, a lot of those organisations as well on the ground, the NGOs work with young people to try and get them to safe safely across, rather than, you know, the ways that they're going about trying to get to the UK are really dangerous. They're risking their lives daily to you know, hide on lorries or trucks, and you know, hide in containers. And there's been some terrible stories of people not making it.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be. You're just talking a little bit before about the volunteer work that's happening over there, and in an article you wrote, you met young volunteer Chris, and about what they were doing to try and help. They were preparing food and going out to these areas. Tell us about some of the other young volunteers you met who you're helping out with.
Yeah, sure. There's quite a few different NGOs, and they all run out of one warehouse, and they're a really amazing group of people. They're all so young. I guess that was what was, it's shocking, but also really exciting, is that these young people are putting their lives on hold. Beth, another young girl that we interviewed, also, I think, shares her story in the Calais episode about, you know, how hard it is, but how rewarding it is as well to be able to be on the ground and doing something. Another volunteer that I met in Dunkirk, you know, I think it's hard because it feels like things just keep getting worse, because the police are so forceful with moving people on constantly and with some pretty brutal force, and, you know, with tear gas and batons, and they don't want people to stay put. But the thing is that people keep coming back and the issue isn't being addressed. And, you know, these volunteers, they feel responsible. They're on the ground. They're forming relationships with these people and really close friendships. You know, I met one young girl who had been there for over a year, and she found it very hard to return back to the UK and have a normal job when she couldn't go through with it. She ended up coming back again because of the help that she knows that she can do, that it's so vital. And it's just really basic needs that people are wanting, you know, their food, shelter, all the things that we take for granted.
Definitely. And it's the sort of thing that we all, you know, look at from afar and think, how can we help? What can we do? Of course, Australia, you know, we've got slimmer issues here. And Manus Island is something that we all look at from afar going, there's these hundreds of people on this island. And what can we do about it? Because the government doesn't seem to be helping. But of course, it's a bit of a different experience for these people. But it's definitely a comparison between the two.
Yeah, I guess for me personally, what was really confronting is that seeing people in such desperate, vulnerable need. Yeah. We don't have that on our island. We're not seeing that in human to human. We see a bit from the media, but even that, you know, it's hard to get the truth and the real story. So, you know, if we can get to places where we can actually connect with other humans, and other people, and understanding that this is a human issue and we're all responsible for the rights of asylum seekers. They have rights. And the more that we can get behind those rights and understanding what that means, and working together rather than sort of thinking that that's not our problem as Australians.
That's right, yeah. What would you hope audiences can take away from your program?
I guess by understanding, obviously, the global issues at large, but also the fact that I guess going back to what I said before, is that these are people. And I'm at a conference today called RARE, and it's amazing, and it's basically about creating opportunities for diversity in creative industries and creating conversations around that and the kind of stories that we tell. And one thing that I really resonated with me that kind of, you know, also resonated with the project that we've just made is that we tend to help people who are similar to us. And I think that that's what's really hard to get through, is that we are actually all the same. And seeing those young kids and meeting them and having those conversations is so invaluable to me personally, obviously, but also trying to get that through and those stories across, that we can create more empathy, of course, but understanding, that we just all want the basics so that we can thrive in the world, and that, you know, some of these young people, particularly, you know, 12, 13-year-olds who are by themselves alone, that, you know, they're the most vulnerable and we should be taking care of them.
Yeah, it definitely is an eye-opening experience. I think I encourage everyone to watch it. I've just watched the first one so far. There's three episodes, People Without Papers, one in Calais, Dunkirk and Paris. And, yeah, really amazing stuff. Thank you so much for chatting to us this afternoon, Emma.
That's all right. Thank you so much.
Cheers. That was Emma Morris. She's a filmmaker and producer for ABC's Foreign Correspondent. And as I mentioned, you can catch those episodes on iView or ABC News YouTube.